There is a new king in town, and suddenly everything changes. The relative calm of years past is gone. The collaboration that had been built between leaders of different identities is erased, forgotten. This new king seems very insecure. He is hungry to gather power to himself. And almost immediately, he begins to look for a scapegoat. Who can he blame his challenges on? Who can he rally his people against as a common enemy? And his eyes, his hate falls to the immigrants, to the people who do not look like him, who do not speak like him, who do not worship like him. There are so many of these foreigners, he cries. They are taking over. Look at the power, the undue influence they are wielding. Imagine, he says, sowing fear. Imagine if they were to join forces with our enemies. They are a threat to our way of life. And with that, he begins to systematically oppress them. But these people are strong. Even under harsh oppression, they flourish. He will not keep them down. And so, irate, he tries again. He summons these midwives and demands that they kill the baby boys born to the Hebrew women. In the hopes of squashing this scapegoated other. Can you imagine? Step into the story as one of those midwives and hear this horrific demand. And then at the same time, consider your stability, your place of relative safety, your livelihood, all while hearing this personal order of one far more powerful than you. Imagine the fear that this king creates. This fear is pervasive. Whether this fear comes from a threat or a demand from unknown possibilities, or even the fear that comes from being courageous enough to reach for hope, this fear is present in our body. And this past week in particular, the fear has been palpable. It's almost as if I can see it condensing on the windows. I can almost hear it dripping down from the ceiling. The fear comes in questions. Who will show up in our city today? What hatred will they spew? What violence will be wrought? What will the fallout be here and nationally? The fear drills down in more personal questions also. Will I look away? Will I make myself busy and check the news later on? Or, if I stand up, will I remain committed to this way of nonviolence? If something happens to me, what will happen to my family? And maybe more than anything, will any of this make a difference? Jesus says to his disciples over and over again that they should not be afraid. But really? Really? This fear is enough to paralyze us, to freeze our feet in place, to seal our lips. But even with this fear comes choice. Cue the midwives again, Shipra and Puah. Friends, they actually have names. This is a rare treat that women in Scripture have names. And what's more, this twisted king remains unknown through the story. It is striking. Whatever fear Shipra and Puah may have felt as they entertained the king's demand, he does not dictate their action. Their response is motivated by their fear of God. Now, I think that fear of God gets a bad rap today. Now, I don't think of it as cowering in terror and separation. I think of it as a stance of awe, as reverencing the enormity, as giving ourselves, embracing the humility of standing before tremendous love. And this is where these midwives derive their direction and their vision and their identity. And they let these boys live. Furious, the king summons them again, asking what has gone wrong. How did this not work? But they are ready. They do not miss a beat in spinning off a lie, a bold form of civil disobedience. The king's hatred and anger does not sway these women. They know who they are, and they know who they serve. And so even through the fear, they stand their ground. Midwives show us how to move through fear. This is what Shipra and Puah have been teaching me this week, and this is what my midwives taught me. My three children were all born at home with midwives. And the first two, I think my fear was pretty normal. Would I be up to the challenge? Would I be able to handle the pain? And my midwives were steady, and they saw me through it. But it was the third. It was in my pregnancy with Sam that fear took hold of me in a way that still calls me up short. I was still reeling from his brother's death, and all through that pregnancy, I would count kicks. I would jostle my belly to make him wake up and move. And when it came time for Sam to be born, that fear kicked up in a way that I have not experienced before or since. The questions that came, questions, could I do this? What if there was a complication? What if he didn't make it? Michelle, my midwife, arrived through these darkened streets before dawn, and she came in with clarity. She was steady. She was grounded not in my fear, but instead in awe. She was centered. She was grounded in her knowledge that life is possible, that it is hard, but it is good, and it comes. And that morning, I let my fear fly. At one point, Michelle's apprentice commented that she didn't expect that a priest would cuss so much. I did. I did not hold back. Because the fear, it was real. It was visceral. And when we came to that pivotal time and Sam was born, I held my breath waiting for his. I did not move, waiting for what felt like an endless time. And he cried. He breathed. He was fine. But weeks later, I asked Michelle, what had that been like for her? How long was that time, that waiting, really? And she smiled. She said it was totally normal, that she knew the breath would come. She would not be sucked down into my fear because she was centered in that place of awe. She was practiced in this work. She knew how to trust the breath. And friends, this is what we need today. We need our midwives. Mr. Rogers has said famously that in disasters we should look for the helpers, right? And yes, we should, but I would challenge us to go further yet, that in times of fear and oppression, we need to look for our midwives. Where are they leading us? Where are they making new life possible? Where are they guiding us through our fear to trust the breath? Friends, look for them. Look for the midwives. Where are these people leading from their daily positions, from their normal vocations, to create room for life, to advocate for liberation in our cities, to make space for sanctuary? Right here among us. Look for them. Look for these midwives. Sit at their feet. Apprentice with them. Practice their ways. We must make this our practice. Because here is a king who would toss away the lives of boys who he has scapegoated because of their color and their creed and their language. Here is a king who would rally his power on their backs. Except. Except for the fact that the midwives rise. Even before Moses can lead his people through the sea on dry land, the midwives rise. Even before Moses is drawn up out of the water, the midwives rise. We do not know what will come today, what we will find in our city. We do not know what will transpire in our nation in the days ahead. But we know this fear. We know this fear that threatens our hearts. We know this fear that would paralyze our faith. And we have a choice this day and every day, which is how we are going to rise up in the way of life. How are we going to rise up and resist oppression? How are we going to dig our heels in to support a life that is possible and safe and good for the scapegoated other? How will we join with these midwives to trust the breath and rise up? We do not trust the breath out of cockiness, or because we think that our tactics are somehow much more clever. We trust the breath because in baptism, we yoke ourselves to the living God, and to Jesus the Christ, and to the Ruach, the Spirit, the breath. We trust the breath because at the core of our being, we know that in the end, love wins. Look for the midwives. Be the midwives, friends. Stand in awe of the living God. Trust that new life is coming. Trust in your breath. And trust the breath that is here.